Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is awesome. Obviously, another step in this process that we've been talking about for the last couple months now. Obviously, you know that there's a lot of responsibility that comes along with starting the game as far as preparation goes throughout the week, as far as the, you know, responsibilities that happen off the field and representing this team the right way. But, you know, as awesome as it is, it just means I have to work harder and try to do whatever I can to continue to have some success out on the field and hold on to this position as tight as I can.
You know, when we drafted this young man, we spent a lot of time with him, and he has talent and ability, and he has the football IQ, but we've seen him grow, you know, through this process with it. So he's done a good job that way. He works at it. It's important to him. We're teaching him how we want our quarterback to perform, and that's a challenge for anybody. As a quarterback, you live a kind of lonely road a little bit. When you're here, you come here early, you stay here late. We're in the middle and in the process of finding what's best for him. How is he going to best get all this information, get it in, and then be able to give it back to his teammates? And he's going through it, but he's done a great job. You know, he doesn't run from it. He kind of runs to it. He understands. He knows that's what it's going to take if he really wants this job. This is not for everybody. I think we all know that.
You have to keep in mind that the next draft is completely filled with quarterback prospects that everybody's really excited about. So if you let Deshaun sit on the bench this year and you don't find out exactly what he is, you're now going to go into that draft and you're going to go, oh, boy, there's some really good other players. Do I go ahead and hang with Deshaun? I haven't really seen him in the game. Or do I draft one of these other kids? Now I've got two of them on my team. I would play him. I would play him like Troy Aikman. If he goes 1-15, I don't care. But at the end of the day, I have to know what I think of Deshaun Kizer and then make a decision in the next draft.
I think it was a home run for the Celtics. They got an all-star point guard who's 25 to go with a two-guard that's a little older for the next 10 to 15 years to go with Jaylen Brown, Marquise Morris, and the kid, Tatum, who I had, other than Josh Jackson, I had him the second best player in the draft. The Celtics are going to be great for the next 10 years. I tell you what, I'm not sure if they're not the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. They might be a year away. But they're going to be a perennial contender for the next 10 years with the players they got. Isaiah's a good player, hell of a player. But they're not going to win the championship next year, and they're not going to give him $200 million. That's why the Celtics traded him more than anything. And then if LeBron leaves, the cover's going to be bearing Cleveland.
We got a game tomorrow against one of the best in the game. We'll try to beat him, try to find a way to beat him, because it'll be hard. I guess what I was referring to is sometimes you don't have everybody. That doesn't mean you can't win. It just can be a little more challenging.
The Red Sox won on Wednesday. The Houston Astros won, so the gap between the two teams is still at 4 games, but it's amazing how much ground the Boston has made up in such a short time. How concerned do you think the Astros should be about losing home field advantage, especially knowing that they've lost 2 of 3 against Boston this year already, and the final 4 games of regular season at Fenway Park? I'm beginning to wonder, Tim, if we might be talking about 2019 rather than some time in the long off future for an electronic strike zone. What do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, Buster, it's sooner rather than later. Now, there's still a huge debate, and I'm having trouble with this, whether this is the right thing to do.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, yes, indeed. It is the extravaganza. What's going on? Welcome. Thanks so much for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo's sports leader. My goodness, that's a montage right there. That is a mouthful. That's about 6 hours worth of discussion material in about 2.5 minutes of montagerie from Mr. Cushlin. How about it? Deshaun Kizer, Toledo's own, is the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns for the 3rd game of the preseason. Yeah. There's reason to cheer for that. In all seriousness, there is reason to cheer for that. Because, quite frankly, and I think, I said this yesterday, Kush, when all of this kind of, was announced, that the preseason game being the dress rehearsal game means that essentially you are going to play the whole first half with the starters.
Right.
All the starters are going to play the whole first half. This is generally how it goes. Sometimes, depending on the coach, depending on the level of experience of your team and your starters, you might play a series into the third quarter, the ones, in the third preseason game. And, of course, they don't play at all in the fourth preseason game. So the fact that Deshaun Kizer of Central Catholic has been named the starting quarterback of the Browns for preseason game number one and will play preseason game number three, beg your pardon, and will play with the ones for the entire period of time with the ones, he would literally have to fall apart. He would have to just completely fall flat on his face or get hurt to not be the starting quarterback in Pittsburgh or against Pittsburgh in game number one. That's home game, I believe, isn't it?
Yes.
They host the Steelers, do they not?
Yeah, I believe so,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, they do. I got in front of me. They host the Steelers. Okay. So guess what I see today? Literally, Scott Petrak, who is one of our favorite Browns guests, Browns writers, on his wonderful page, website called BrownsZone.com. Rookie to start at QB Saturday, Jackson says he'd have to flop to lose the number one spot. Exactly what I said yesterday, that Hugh Jackson said late yesterday afternoon to the media, he would have to flop to not hold on to the number one spot. And I think that is exactly what the situation ought to be. They are not going to play. It doesn't look like Brock Osweiler at all. If they do, it'll be very, very minimal because the chances are very good now. They're going to try to dump his $16 million backup contract onto somebody else and make a trade. Probably won't get very much, maybe a mid to late round draft pick or something of that nature, since the acquiring team is going to take on that $16 million guaranteed salary for this season. But you know what, Kush? There could be and should be and may be some partners out there, because you know as well as I do, the Jets QB situation is a train wreck. They don't want Christian Hackenberg to be the guy. They don't want Bryce Petty to be the guy.
Right.
Quite frankly, they might not want Brock Osweiler to be the guy either, because they want to lose a whole bunch of games so they can get Sam Darnold next year to be the guy.
Right.
We also know that down there in Jacksonville, the awful Blake Bortles has now kind of slipped out of favor and will be the second quarterback onto the field in their third preseason game, the tune-up game, the dress rehearsal game, the whatever you want to call it, behind former Michigan quarterback Chad Henne. Neither one of those guys is a long-term answer at quarterback. Maybe, just maybe, there's a Brock Osweiler hope there for Jacksonville. So the Browns essentially have decided that Deshaun Kizer, unless he just flat-out stinks in the third preseason game, that he is going to be their starting quarterback against Pittsburgh. And I got to tell you, I wasn't in favor of it. Before this was kind of announced, I didn't think it would be a good idea to start him right out of the gate. I didn't think he's ready for that yet, but I am excited by it. Didn't think it was a good idea, but I'm really, really excited by it. I want to see him play. Quite frankly, I can't wait to see how he does. As much as I am disgusted by the Cleveland Browns anyway, and I don't really feel like watching them because of their disrespect of the flag and the national anthem on Monday night, I am reinvigorated by Deshaun Kizer, the Notre Dame product, and most importantly, the Central Catholic product, a guy who I think was done a little bit wrong by his college coach, Brian Kelly, on the way into the draft. Absorbing, they say, that Browns offense, the playbook, the audibles, the line of scrimmage pre-reads, all of those things that rookies are supposed to take really, 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 a really long time at getting good at, he is absorbed, and that's why Hugh Jackson has said, let's get him going. He's going to play with the ones for however long the ones play in preseason game number three, and then he will indeed, unless he is just awful, start in game one. What do you think, Kush?
I'm kind of liking this, especially more and more as I've thought about it in the last 24 hours or so. And, you know, I'm the type of guy who has been said on these airwaves and in the past, you know, the Browns have tried everything at quarterback. It's time to just go get one of these guys higher in the draft, and Kizer wasn't as high in the draft. That's another story. But once you get that guy, and obviously I'm in the minority clearly these days on this one, but I'm in favor of throw him right out there. You heard Chris Collinsworth in the montage. He kind of echoed something that I said. He referred to Troy Aikman's rookie year back in, what was that, 1989 or whatever, when he went 1-15, thrown right in there as rookie. I always reference Peyton Manning's 1998 rookie season when those Colts went 3-13.
The problem with that, and Collinsworth should know this too, as well as you, for every one or two of those guys that you can say they played as a rookie and they took their lumps and had 28 interceptions and went 1-15 and look at them, they went on to the Hall of Fame. I will give you 30 guys who played right out of the gate and who just stunk and never recovered from the, the beating that they took and the lack of confidence, the confidence they lost. You know what I mean? All of that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And that's why you don't see a lot of teams doing that anymore. And I'm not suggesting that.
That's why Tom Savage is starting in Houston instead of Deshaun Watson, who is clearly going to be the best player.
Yeah.
But Tom Savage is going to hold that spot for as long as Bill O'Brien down there thinks that Deshaun Watson can benefit from learning on the sideline. And, I don't mean to cut you off. I'm really excited for Kizer.
Yeah, totally.
And I want to see him do well, but I don't know if this is necessarily the right thing. So I've just got all these emotions going, this is a little scary to me, especially going up against Pittsburgh. As I said to Maniloff, going up against Pittsburgh, they continue to have one of the league's best pass rushes.
Yep.
Even though the players change every year and it's a new guy and it's a, new middle linebacker who blitzes, a new guy coming off the edge, new defensive ends and all this stuff, they always seem to get huge pass rush production. And if I want to see Deshaun Kizer as a rookie going up against those guys, 21 years old, trying to figure out the Steelers defense in the, at home against that team. So I'm nervous, but man, I'm really happy for the kid.
Oh yeah. I'm totally happy for him. And it's an interesting new page for yet another Browns quarterback. But at the same time, it's something else that Chris Collinsworth mentioned in part of that clip from the montage was, and he's right. And you referenced it just a few minutes ago when referencing the probably worse than the Browns. Oh, good to say that, by the way. Somebody's worse than the Browns with the New York Jets and who they might want to get. You're in that weird pickle. You want to find out if you can go with Kizer or if you have to use another one of those high draft picks, because odds are the Browns are still going to be drafting high again this year. I mean, after all, wouldn't you say a 4-game improvement is a pretty good improvement?
Oh, my goodness, from a 1-15 season?
Exactly. So but that only brings it to 5-11, so you're still probably drafting
in the top. Which is my prediction, by the way.
Right, mine too, by the way. But that means you're still drafting in the top 10 with a record like that. So you want to find out, and a handful of December games may not be enough. And if he does well enough, that obviously could alter the Browns' draft plans for next year. Maybe they don't feel they have to go over quarterback, or he gets hurt, or he doesn't play that well. Maybe they still think they do. So they still have those kind of decisions to make. And all in all, I'm okay with this decision. I really am. I mean, Brock Osweiler, at most, was going to be a placeholder. We all knew that from the beginning. Since yesterday, that there's already starting to be rumors out there the Browns, good luck with that, by the way, guys, are going to try to trade Osweiler. I don't see that happening for some various reasons. And then, obviously, Kessler is Cody Kessler. So you want to find out, for better or worse, what you really have, in Kizer in it counts NFL games.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I'm okay with this decision, too, until, is it a 1 o'clock game? Until 4 o'clock on September 10th.
Right.
then ask me if I'm okay with that decision. And yes, that would be indeed an armchair slash Monday afternoon quarterbacking type of situation, but that's how I would see it. So here's what Deshaun Kizer, and by the way, I mentioned a lot of great stuff in the montage. The Kizer thing, of course, we started with Charles Barkley weighing in, as the entire basketball world has, on the Kyrie Irving to the Celtics trade that dominated our show yesterday. We'll talk more about that. Tito Francona and the walking wounded, the Band-Aid Brigade that is the Indians out there as they try to hold on to first place in the Central. Royals are hot, have won 3 in a row, while the Indians have now lost 2 in a row to the Red Sox. They cannot seem to swing the bat at all. Against underwhelming Boston pitching. Well, Pomerantz having a really good year, actually. But against Fister 2 nights ago.
By the way, can I stop you real quick? Because
no.
It was Pomerantz.
What's that?
Because it was Pomerantz for the Red Sox yesterday, and he is having, to his credit, a good year.
Yeah, it's 13-4.
Yeah, but as we know, Bob, you and I being Indians fans, he, along with Alex White, who's no longer at baseball, by the by,
right,
were the guys sent to Colorado, 2011, I think it was, for
Ubaldo Jimenez. Yes, indeed.
So with Pomerantz doing that well, are we still mad about that a little bit? I feel like we should be.
No, I'm not. Because you know what? Alex White is out of baseball.
Yeah.
Right? They were both considered to be two of the top prospects in AAA pitching at the
time. They were.
Great, great young prospects. Get a little bit of time with the big leagues. They're both going to be great. And this is what it is when you have a prospect. As you know, it's a flat-out coin flip
sometimes.
That's
why they're called prospects.
That's right. Is it going to be a guy who turns out to be a stud? And Pomerantz is, you know, I don't know if you call him a stud. He's not an all-star, but he's a solid major league pitcher, having a really good year this year with 13 wins still in August on a first-place team. But Alex White, who was supposed to be just as good, if not better, he was a more power pitcher while Pomerantz was the, you know, kind of the curveball specialist. Alex White flamed out. You just do not know. So, you know, Inubaldo Jimenez for a hot minute there, of course, was, you know, the best pitcher in the National League for a hot minute. And then, of course, you know, things went the way that it did. You just don't know. So a lot of baseball stuff there as well. But back to the issue of the quarterback, Deshaun Kizer. He is going to be trying to do something that the Browns have only seen done once in the last 25 years. Really, really good analysis here. Kizer, the rookie, added an explanation point. I swear to God, people are stupid. An exclamation point is what they meant to write to this. This is 247 Sports. It sounds like my wife. Do you know my wife will say into her voice texting, you know, into the smartphone, she'll say explanation point and it'll type an exclamation point.
Oh, I hate that. My wife does that sometimes herself too, and it always changes the word. And I'm like, this is why I don't do the voice. I will type it myself. Thank you very much.
I will do the voice text, but I also have a little automatic default disclaimer at the bottom of my text that says,
there you go.
You know, that say any typos are not my fault. I'm voice texting or I'm typing on a smartphone. Anyway, to the statement recently when he said his goal, his ultimate goal, is for all pro teammate Joe Thomas, who has seen a lot of quarterbacks in 10 years with the Browns. Didn't we count him up to be 18?
Yes, it's 18
different starters.
Yes, 18 of the 26 different starters have been starting while Joe Thomas has been their left tackle.
Yeah. His goal is for Joe Thomas, Deshaun Kizer's goal, is for Joe Thomas not to see another starting quarterback this year. That is his goal, is to start all 16 games. That has only been done once by a Cleveland Browns quarterback in the last quarter century.
I.e. the new Browns since 1999.
No, no longer. 25 years. Going back 25 years to 1991.
That's
what we're talking about. Only Tim Couch. Tim Couch had 16 starts in 2001. Prior to that, Bernie Kosar in 1991. And the list here, let me read it to you. Bernie started 16 games in 91. Then in 92, Tom Zach, 8. 93, Testaverde and Kosar, 6. These are the most. 94, Testaverde, 13. 95, Testaverde, 12. No team from 96, 97 to 98. 99, Couch, 14. Peterson in 2000, 8. Then Couch, 16. Then Couch, 14. Holcomb and Couch, 8 each in 2003. Garcia, 10 in 2000. Wow. Wow. I cannot believe it's been 13 years since the Jeff Garcia era. All 10 games of it.
All runs together, doesn't it?
That's freaking me out, man. Dilfer, 11 starts in 2005. That's also trippy because I still think he was born on ESPN. He's been there so long, right?
Yeah, it feels like he had that Super Bowl with Baltimore that went right to the broadcast. Nope, he stopped in Cleveland to be one of the names on the jersey.
2006, Charlie Fry started 13. Ugh. 2007, Derek Anderson started 15. Then he started 9 in 2008. Brady Quinn started 9 in 2009. Colt McCoy, 8, and then 13 in 2010-11. Whedon started 15, almost there, in 2012. Jason Campbell, 8 starts in 2013. Hoyer, 13 starts in 2014. McCown, 8 starts in 2015. And then last year, the most was Cody Kessler with 8. So literally in the last 25 years, that has only been done one time, because that goes back to 1992, 25 years ago. And that would be Tim Couch in 2001.
Usually when it comes to bad Browns quarterback things, because I didn't realize that, because I usually stop at 1999 when the new Browns were born.
Well, see,
but that's interesting.
Because you know, we talked about this when we were making fun of the Bears quarterback situation with Cutler. Of course, before Cutler left and went to the broadcast.
Right, of course.
Before ever actually turning on the microphone and then going to Miami. But we talked about they have not had a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback since Jim freaking McMahon. Okay?
Oh, wow.
Now, you remember that. We talked about this.
Yeah.
We went through all of their quarterbacks.
Sounding familiar.
They've had a worse situation, I think. I mean, having a star quarterback, a star caliber quarterback, since McMahon, and he wasn't even really a superstar. He was just, you know, the starter for the team that won in 85. But the Browns have not had a star quarterback since Bernie Kosar. And so that goes pre-1999. That's the reason I bring that up. You know, when we go back to, oh, they've been awful at quarterback since 1999. No, they've been awful at quarterback since Bernie Kosar got cut in 1993.
93, that was, mid-93.
Yeah, and even then he wasn't as good. He wasn't a star anymore. That's why Bill Belichick, you know, cut him.
Diminishing skills, I believe, was the phrase.
Right. But so if you think about it, Jim, you know, from that vantage point, the last time, you know, Bernie Kosar was a star was when he started 16 games in 1991. And now let's add that up to 2017 and help me do that math. That's 26 years.
Oh, my God.
26 years since they've had a star quarterback. So you got to, you know, and it's easy for us to think, well, since they came back, the quarterback parade started with Couch. Well, it really was bad, even in 95, 94, 93, 92 with Tom Zach. And then, of course, like I said, then Bernie Kosar in 91 was, you know, the last real good year he had. So, anywho, the long story there, the short story there, it just took a long time to tell, is DeShone Kizer says his goal is to start 16 games so Joe Thomas doesn't have to deal with another voice behind him.
Somebody take that bet to Vegas immediately. Given the Browns' obvious 26-year history, you should make some chunk of change if you bet on that one. It actually happens.
And by the way, if you're wondering, that grand total of number of quarterbacks, not since 1999 like we've done, or not since the Joe Thomas era of 18.
Which so starting with 92.
No, going back to Kosar in 91. Since okay. He started 16 games then, they have trotted out 32 different starting quarterbacks.
My head hurts now.
32 in 26 years. So obviously more than one a year. Think about that. How many starting quarterbacks have the Patriots had since that time? Two, probably.
I think it was
Bledsoe and Brady.
The CAG is there. When was Bledsoe's rookie year, honestly, yeah. Which I'm looking up right
and
now.
I'm just
either two or three.
There, but you understand the point. You know, same thing. The Steelers have had, you know, since Roethlisberger and when was he a rookie in 2003? Was that the year?
I think so.
Was it 03 that Roethlisberger and Philip Rivers and
Roethlisberger's rookie year was 04.
And Eli Manning. Yeah, 04, was it?
Okay. Yes.
Well, anyway, you know, these guys, all of these successful teams have had one or two, and even with injuries, maybe three or four quarterbacks in the last 15 years. You know, Browns have had 32 in the last 26 years. So just to kind of throw that out.
And Bledsoe's rookie year, FYI, was 1993.
93. Okay, so since 1991, whoever that was before that, then Bledsoe and then Brady, three quarterbacks. And I suppose if you count the injury to Brady when Matt Cassel had to start, you know, that's... But that's a different story when you're talking about injury replacements versus trying to find somebody
right.
Who can play the position.
Totally different conversation.
So Kizer's got a real, real, you know, lofty goal there. How about that, by the way? How about that for a low bar? My goal isn't to, you know, make the all-rookie team. My goal isn't to, you know, have a winning record with this team. My goal isn't to throw more touchdown passes than interceptions. DeShone Kizer, my goal is to start all the games. And that would be a hell of an accomplishment. For the Central Catholic product. And I hope to goodness that he does it. For his sake, honestly, because I want him to have a good career, and obviously for that franchise's sake. All right, a lot more NFL to talk about. There was a rally last night outside the headquarters of the National Football League. People got together, led by the NAACP and some other activist groups, to demand to meet with Roger Goodell, threatening a boycott. If Colin Kaepernick didn't get a job, what does all of that mean and what does all of that do? It means a whole hell of a lot of nothing, and what it does is hurt his chances to get a job. If you don't understand why or how, you're not paying attention, but I will explain it to you. I will also tell you after the bottom of the hour Sports Center what prominent NFL running back completely agrees with me about the reason why Colin Kaepernick is unemployed right now. I'll tell you all of those stories after we come back from our Sports Center, and of course, after we give you the wild stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the wild stat of the day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Yeah, indeed. Buffalo Wild Wings, wild stat of the day. It has to do with your Detroit Tigers and their pitching, or they're pretending to be pitching. In the series so far against the Yankees, two games, the first two games of their three-game set, Yankees have put up 23 on the board. Yeah, 23 in two games. Six home runs off Tigers pitching, three in each game. That's an 11.5 ERA for the Tigers pitchers in the two games. If you're looking for the if you're scoring at home there, Tigers pitchers are awful. And the Yankees are feasting on them right now. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings stat of the day. On the other side, we've got a sports center. And then on the other side of that, we'll tell you what prominent NFL star says Colin Kaepernick is not worth signing. He agrees wholeheartedly with me. And we'll talk a little bit more about why the rally outside the commissioner's office in New York City last night would hurt Kaepernick more than help him. All of that coming up right here on The Ticket.
By calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It's 3:39. We told you about the Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day a moment ago, and now's a reminder about fantasy football in Buffalo Wild Wings, how they kind of go, you know, hand in hand. They really do. Fantasy football commissioners are under a lot of pressure, right? You're the commissioner of your league. You want to have a good league. You want to be first class. You want to make a good first impression. That means bring your owners to Buffalo Wild Wings for the perfect draft day party. That's right. Book your draft party at B-Dubs, and you'll get a free draft kit, along with a special draft feast of boneless wings, three sides, and three shareables, all at a price to feed your whole league. That's right. So start your fantasy football season off right at Buffalo Wild Wings at participating locations while supplies last. And even if you're not doing a league and you're looking for lunch, don't forget the B-Dubs Fast Break lunch menu. All the highlights of the regular menu at discounted prices every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. All right. Hey, Kush, we did the Wild Wings wild stat of the day, and we talked about how the pitchers, Tigers pitchers, are getting beaten up by the Yankees in this series. Some other kind of beating up going on right now up at Comerica.
I hate to say this for Tigers fans, but in that twisted bad way, this is about the most life I've seen out of the Tigers in a long time this year. So basically, here's what happened. Tigers had a four-run inning. They took they're up 6-3, so they're actually playing a little bit better, unlike what the wild stat described for us a few minutes ago. So
Michael Fulmer having a nice day.
He is. And that's good to see because he's had a bad last couple outings. So they're in the Tiger in the bullpen right now are the Yankees. Tommy Canale decides he's going to throw behind Miguel Cabrera. He immediately gets tossed, is wondering why, which of course leads Joe Girardi to get tossed. And then then they have to be forced for the pitching change. And Miguel Cabrera is still at bat, of course, obviously, because it didn't hit him. The umpire said it didn't hit him, but that Canale threw behind him, so right. Out you go.
Right.
Well, Miguel Cabrera is then finally ready to stroll back to the plate with Aroldis Chapman now on the mound. And I want to make sure I get the name right of who's catching. Austin Romine is catching for the Yankees.
Okay.
Miguel Cabrera comes up to the plate. Starts John at Romine. Romine says something back, and Cabrera just shoves him to the ground, and there is a giant brawl at home plate. Now, I'm not kidding. You know, you see a lot of times the bullpen, he just pushed him down. Miguel Cabrera, so I'm sorry to say, Tigers fans, expect a suspension for Miguel Cabrera. You know baseball will do that. And then I mean it too, Bob. This is a full-on brawl at home plate. You know, usually you see the bench is clear, the dugout's clear, and nothing ever happens. No, this was an actual brawl. Most life I've seen out of the Tigers in weeks.
So not just pushing and shoving and grabbing and holding, but punching. And,
I'm looking at some of the replays.
Elbow drops and anybody do any RKOs?
I did not see, but it looks like suplexes. Miguel Cabrera has been tossed. Romine for the Tigers catcher. Not to be confused, of course, with the Tigers utility man, Andrew Romine, not related as far as I know. They both just got tossed, and the umpires are now talking with the, I'm assuming that's the Yankees bench coach, because Joe Girardi has already been tossed from this game. It was pretty crazy there for a couple seconds.
Wow, good stuff. Well, keep us posted on that, because that is, you know, maybe after getting pummeled for the last couple of days, maybe they are a little bit feisty. All right, so that's the update from Comerica. Now, to the NFL stories, I just told you two different stories. I said, number one, there was a little rally last night as a few hundred people got together to protest outside of the National Football League offices in New York, demanding, led by the NAACP, demanding that Roger Goodell address the Colin Kaepernick blackballing, as some people think it is. They think that the NFL owners have colluded with one another and have blackballed Colin Kaepernick, none of them agreeing to sign him because of his divisive national anthem protests and his shameful actions during the presentation of the United States flag. And his statements, of course, in press conferences and social media that have come after that, that have made a whole lot of people really, really, really angry. Now, we all know that Colin Kaepernick has, let's just say he's touched off some, he's kind of started a trend, if you will. Let's put it that way. Other players last year started to do the same thing. And at the start of this year, a few prominent players, including Michael Bennett of the Seahawks, Marshawn Lynch of the Oakland Raiders, Malcolm Jenkins, former Buckeye, and also a whole host of Cleveland Browns this past Monday have all done the same thing. Now, the argument that the fans and the protesters at the NFL, well, first of all, I don't know what argument they're making. Let me remind everybody for the 1,479,674,283rd time that Colin Kaepernick is employed because unemployed because Colin Kaepernick chose to become unemployed. Okay? He turned down a hell of a lot of money with the San Francisco 49ers, gave a bunch of money back in order to get an opt-out so he could leave the 49ers and become a free agent where he thought he could do better. All right? He chose to opt out of a contract that was going to pay him a bunch of money and give him a job for this season. He chose that. Nobody forced unemployment on Colin Kaepernick. Please understand that. Nobody at that protest outside the league offices last night understands that. Hundreds of people, according to the USA Today, hundreds of people got there together to show support for Kaepernick. Bad news for Colin Kaepernick. None of those hundreds of people, not one of them was an NFL GM. Not one of them was a coach. None of them were owners. Just FYI. Okay? He is unemployed and they're mad that he's unemployed. He thought he could do better. He can't. And now they're demanding that Roger Goodell do what? The NAACP is saying if Roger Goodell won't at least meet with us and discuss this, about how a player can lose his job. This is their story. They're wrong. They're lying, but they're sticking to it. They're saying he lost his job for free speech, lost his job for being an activist, lost his job for doing something unpopular on the sidelines, standing up for something that he believes in America, all of this nonsense. He didn't lose his job for that. He quit his job. All right? But they want Roger Goodell to do what? That's the question here. What's the point of demanding a meeting with Roger Goodell? Roger Goodell can't have a meeting with the NAACP or any of the other activist groups and then say, okay, I'll do something about it, and then call any National Football League owner and say, I demand that you hire Colin Kaepernick. Because they don't work for Roger Goodell. Truth be told, Roger Goodell works for them. He is employed by the owners. Okay? So there is absolutely nothing whatsoever, nothing that Roger Goodell can do about this. He cannot force an owner to hire somebody that they don't want to hire. Which brings us to the question, why don't they individually, not in a collusive manner, why don't they want to hire him? And can I answer the question as simply as this? Because of events like last night. Do you know what last night was at the NFL offices? A circus. It's a circus. The kind of circus that is going to follow Colin Kaepernick around everywhere he goes. And it's not by the people who don't like him. He's not being followed by people who are saying, boo, don't hire Kaepernick. He's being followed by people saying, come on, somebody hire Kaepernick. He got a look-see from Pete Carroll up in Seattle. And the Seattle City Council, or at least one city council member, wrote an op-ed in the newspaper to the owner of the Seahawks saying, please hire Colin Kaepernick. We want to see it happen. And guess what owners don't want? They don't want a circus, especially for a backup quarterback, which is essentially all that Colin Kaepernick could be at this particular point of his career. How do we know that? Well, quite simply, because he's not very good anymore. Now, people say, well, even though he's not very good anymore, he's better than Blake Bortles. How come Bortles has a job? He's better than Austin Davis. How come Austin Davis has a job? Clearly, he is being blackballed. Well, no such thing is clear. You see, if he is an average to below average quarterback and brings a circus to town, and somebody else is an average to below average quarterback and brings no such circus to town, which average to below average quarterback do you think NFL owners are going to be more likely to want around? They're going to say, no circus for me, please. No distraction. No nothing of the sort. That's what they're going to say, and that's what they have decided. So when you have these, and by the way, I talked about this back when another controversial figure was looking for a job. And people talked about who is going to draft former SEC co-defensive player of the year from the University of Missouri, Michael Sam. Who's going to draft an openly gay player? And we talked at that time about anybody who's willing to do that, based not on his status as a first openly gay player, but based on his ability. That if they take him, they then are going to have to deal with the immediate criticism the moment they cut him. In the same way, Colin Kaepernick, if he is taken by a general manager and coach and owner who say, we'll take him on, we'll pay him a little bit of money, we'll bring him in to be our backup, or even to compete for our starting job. But if he isn't very good, and there's a lot of evidence that says he won't be, and we have to cut him, are we then going to be ripped and ridiculed for releasing their celebrity cause? Most owners are just like, I don't have anything to do with it. Forget about it. Not a chance. I am not going to put my team in the middle of this circus, right? So the fact that everywhere he goes or every time his name is brought up, there's rallies on his behalf, that's hurting his chances of being signed. Last night, though, several hundred people outside the NFL offices who chanted and held signs and wore T-shirts and wore Kaepernick number 7 jerseys from the Niners, all they did was decrease his chances of getting a job because everybody watching says, not going to be a part of that. Not bringing the crowds of protesters and then maybe the counter-protesters who are livid. Cushlin, I don't know about you, but I wrote about my disgust and dissatisfaction on Facebook for the Browns after what they pulled on Monday night against the Giants before the game, the 12 guys who knelt. I wrote my disgust and dissatisfaction with that because I am a believer in what the flag represents, liberty and the blood of patriots. I am a believer in what the national anthem represents. I was disgusted by it. I can't tell you how many hundreds of people have responded just to that little post and said, me too, and I'm telling the Browns they're quoting, they're typing out and transcribing what their calls to the Browns were to tell them they're not buying tickets, tell them they're turning their season tickets back in or trying to get out of them or selling them or whatever the case might be. People are livid. So just as owners don't want to have the protesters, they're not going to want the counter-protesters the moment Colin Kaepernick is signed. And plus, quite frankly, some owners are just, you know, they feel about this not because of the way the fans are going to react in their city, but it's how they themselves personally feel about this, and they're just as offended as I am, and a lot of other people are, including Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, who said very directly, this is not what his Cowboys franchise is going to be all about.
Well, I just feel so strongly that the act of recognizing the flag is a salute to our country and all of the people that have sacrificed so that we can have the liberties we have, you know, when that's said. And I feel very strongly that everyone should save that moment for the recognition of the flag, and in a positive way. So I like the way the Cowboys do it.
I don't like the way the Cowboys do a lot of things, Kush, but I like what Jerry Jones just said there, and I agree. I like the way the Cowboys do this. We're not going to let this stuff be a part of our team. We are going to salute the anthem. We're going to salute the flag. We're going to recognize what it means. There's a time for activism. There's a time for football. And the football time is on game day. And we salute our country, and then we go play football, and that's the end of it. I like what Jerry Jones said there. But you know what I like even more? I told you there was a prominent player who has stepped up and almost repeated what I have said on these airwaves for the last several months that this nonsense has gone on. I have said, yes, Colin Kaepernick is probably better than some of the quarterbacks on the rosters right now, especially since most of the rosters still have 3 quarterbacks on them, right? You got about 90 plus guys right now playing quarterback in the NFL. That number will drop considerably to the, you know, probably 64 level. Most teams will carry two quarterbacks on their roster. And then they'll have some practice squad guys. But I have said over and over and over again, it's a football decision, meaning that even though he might be better than some of those other guys, he's not good enough. His potential production is not good enough to bring that circus with him. It's not worth what it's going to do to the franchise, right? I've said this countless numbers of times. I've said if he could play like Aaron Rodgers or even like Matthew Stafford, he'd have a job right now. He'd have a job because owners and GMs would say, you know what? The production I can get from him, the touchdown passes, the late fourth quarter comeback victories I can get from him are worth the headaches I'd have to deal with protesters and counter-protesters. He's good enough. How do we know this is true? Very simple. I just gave you some names. Marshawn Lynch is kneeling. He has a job. Michael Bennett is kneeling. He still has a job. A whole bunch of the Browns players were kneeling. They got a job. And on down the time, down the line we go. They are kneeling and still being employed because, number one, they didn't quit their teams the way he did San Francisco. Number two, because they're good and they're worth it to the owners. Kaepernick is not good and thus worth it. And here is the player, a prominent player, an African-American, who has come out and said exactly the same thing I did about an hour ago. This story ran on ESPN. Running back LeSean McCoy said free agent quarterback Colin Kaepernick is simply not a good enough player to be worth the distraction of a team signing him to play. Holy crap! Come to find out, who knew that LeSean McCoy was just a racist? Because anybody who's white who is saying that, and my hand is in the air, has been called a racist for saying that. Here comes LeSean McCoy, pretty prominent African American in the NFL Players Association, pretty prominent member of the black community, saying, look, this is a football thing. He's not good enough. Quote, it's a lot more than he's not on the team because he doesn't want to stand for the anthem, is what McCoy said today. That may have something to do with it, but I think it also has a lot to do with his play. I'm sure a lot of teams wouldn't want him as their starting quarterback. That chaos that comes along with it, it's a lot. As a team, said LeSean McCoy, trying to win and not have a distraction on the team, I just take that as a player. There's certain players that could be on the team with big distractions, and there's other players that it's not good enough or not worth it. I think his situation is not good enough to have him on a team with all of the attention that comes along with it. I'm sure if a guy like Brady or a guy like whoever is your favorite player, Odell Beckham or a guy like that, you'll deal with the attention and play him. Can I just, I want to give LeSean McCoy a great big bear hug right now. And since he's not here, all I can do is say,
can you dig it?
I want to give LeSean McCoy a hug, and I want to take him to dinner on me, and I want to thank him for having the courage, particularly as a black player, to stand up and articulate what so many of us have been saying forever. Colin Kaepernick has not been blackballed for his anthem protests. Colin Kaepernick is just being viewed by the owners as not worth the risk versus reward production. You take a risk on a guy whose production would be a worthy reward. If you feel the production is not going to be much of a reward because he's just not that good, you don't take the risk of bringing on the circus, the distractions. But when a guy like me says it in Toledo, Ohio, it's that's racially motivated. When a guy like LeSean McCoy says it, maybe, just maybe, some people will shut up and listen. McCoy was also asked how Kaepernick's situation compares with former quarterback Michael Vick, who, of course, became an Eagle and a teammate of LeSean McCoy's in 2009 after spending time in prison for the federal dogfighting charges. McCoy said of Michael Vick, he's 10 times better than Kaepernick. you'll deal with that situation and that attention and that media aspect of it, the good, the bad attention you'll get. Compared to Kaepernick, it's like he's not really that good enough of a player to deal with. So people outside of sports don't really know that. They only see one side of a black guy standing up for a good reason, and the NFL is against him. But I think it's more than that. I think it has to do with some of that, but also dealing with him on the team you're trying to build together. There's so many outsiders that can mess up a team. I can see both sides. I really can. McCoy opined Thursday that Cats today that Kaepernick, who remained unsigned at the start of the season, or as the start of the season approaches September 7th, would not make the roster of certain teams in the NFL. You just have to look at all sides. He said, if I'm an owner or the GM of a team, do I want to put him on my team? Well, is he good enough to be on the squad to even deal with everything that's going on? That's something that I don't really partake in. LeSean McCoy, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, young man, for having the guts and the courage to say the right thing. It's simply a matter of weighing the scales. On one side of the scale, the crap that comes with him being on your roster. On the other side of the scale, the production you get from him as a player. Guess what? That scale is way heavier on the first side than it is on the other. That scale is weighed down with the crap, and it's not nearly enough of the production. If he could throw like Rodgers, well, then the production side would outweigh the distraction side. It's just that simple. Thank you, LeSean McCoy. Extraordinarily well done, sir. All right, what do we got here? Going into the top of the hour break, here's what I've got. I got Brian Regan tickets. Hey, Kush, did you know we had Brian Regan tickets?
I want to say that sounds familiar.
We have two pairs of Brian Regan tickets. Comedian Brian Regan is coming to Stranahan August 27. That's coming right up. Holy cow, that's Sunday.
Indeed, that's Sunday.
That is coming up. I got a couple of pairs of tickets right now. Here's what I'll do. I'll give one pair to caller number 5 at 866-240-1065, and then I'll give the other pair to caller number 8. That's right. I'm going to skip the three people in between, or two people in between 6 and 7. Why not? Callers 5 and 8, you get the tickets. 866-240-1065. We got hour number 2 coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
This is awesome. Obviously, another step in this process that we've been talking about for the last couple months now. Obviously, you know there's a lot of responsibility that comes along with starting the game as far as preparation goes throughout the week, as far as the responsibilities that happen off the field and representing this team the right way. But, as awesome as it is, it just means I have to work harder and try to do whatever I can to continue to have some success out on the field and hold him to this position as tight as I can.
You know, when we drafted this young man, we spent a lot of time with him, and he has talent and ability, and he has the football IQ, but we've seen him grow, through this process with him. So he's done a good job that way. He works at it. It's important to him. We're teaching him how we want our quarterback to perform, and that's a challenge for anybody. As a quarterback, you live a kind of lonely road a little bit. When you're here, you come here early, you stay here late. We're in the middle and in the process of finding what's best for him. How is he going to best get all this information, get it in, and then be able to give it back to his teammates? And he's going through it, but he's done a great job. You know, he doesn't run from it. He kind of runs to it. He understands. He knows that's what it's going to take if he really wants this job. This is not for everybody. I think we all know that.
You have to keep in mind that the next draft is completely filled with quarterback prospects that everybody's really excited about. So if you let Deshaun sit on the bench this year and you don't find out exactly what he is, you're now going to go into that draft and you're going to go, boy, there's some really good other players. Do I go ahead and hang with Deshaun? I haven't really seen him in the game. Or do I draft one of these other kids? Now I've got two of them on my team. I would play him. I would play him like Troy Aikman. If he goes 1-15, I don't care. But at the end of the day, I have to know what I think of Deshaun Kizer and then make a decision in the next draft.
I think it was a home run for the Celtics. They got an all-star point guard who's 25 to go with a two-guard that's a little older for the next 10 to 15 years to go with Jaylen Brown, Marquise Morris, and the kid Tatum, who I had, other than Josh Jackson, I had him the second best player in the draft. The Celtics are going to be great for the next 10 years. I tell you what, I'm not sure if they're not the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. They might be a year away, but they're going to be a perennial contender for the next 10 years with the players they got. Isaiah's a good player, hell of a player. But they're not going to win the championship next year, and they're not going to give him $200 million. That's why the Celtics traded him more than anything. And then if LeBron leaves, the cover's going to be barren Cleveland.
We got a game tomorrow against one of the best in the game. We'll try to beat him. We'll try to find a way to beat him because it'll be hard. I guess what I was referring to is sometimes you don't have everybody. That doesn't mean you can't win. It just can be a little more challenging.
The Red Sox won on Wednesday. The Houston Astros won, so the gap between the two teams is still at four games, but it's amazing how much ground the Boston has made up in such a short time. How real, how concerned do you think the Astros should be about losing home field advantage, especially knowing that they've lost two or three against Boston this year already, and the final four games of regular season at Fenway Park? I'm beginning to wonder, Tim, if we might be talking about 2019 rather than some time in the long off future for an electronic strike zone. What do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, Buster, it's sooner rather than later. Now, there's still a huge debate, and I'm having trouble with this, whether this is the right thing to do.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, rolling onward are we. Our number two underway, 13 minutes past four on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. A lot of good stuff in that montage that we will come back to. But first, as we begin our number two, congratulations to Nick Block of Toledo and to Mike Zollman of Swanton. They are going to laugh their collective arses off along with the guest each because they got the last two pair of tickets to Brian Regan at Stranahan coming up on Sunday, the 27th. So congratulations to them. They were callers 5 and 8. Kush, since we're going to be talking baseball with Chris Cotillo now, real quick, what's the update on the WWE SummerSlam in Comerica?
Well, the update there is the Tigers bullpen, and stop me, Tigers fans, if you heard this one before, have given up the lead. It is now 6-6 in the 7th, yeah, and it was Miguel Cabrera has been ejected from this one, as has Austin Romine of the Yankees, Tommy Canale, the reliever, and also manager Joe Girardi, and an old friend of the show, formerly of the Oakland Press, Matt Mowry, Tigers beat writer, formerly of the Oakland Press. He was among some of the guys tweeting about this. And correction, Austin and Andrew actually are brothers, as in Andrew Romine, the Tigers utility infielder.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's funny. But just to recap what happened there for those who didn't hear what you described before. Who was it who threw behind?
It was Tommy Canale threw behind Miguel Cabrera. This was after an inning or so after Michael Fulmer had hit a Yankee. You know how those things go on baseball. We've had those conversations. He throws behind Cabrera, gets immediately ejected, does Canale. Joe Girardi, of course, comes out in that wonderful, almost old school kind of jawing in the umpire's face to get his money's worth.
Yep.
Then Aroldis Chapman's coming in to relieve because, you know, the reliever gets thrown out. Miguel Cabrera comes back to the plate because it didn't hit him. It went behind him. So it's only a 1-0 count.
And he starts barking at
Austin Romine behind the plate. Romine barks back. Miggy shoves him, and then all the benches and bullpens clear, and this wasn't for show. This was a full-on brawl. I saw punches. I saw The Rock's people's elbow. I saw so much in this. And as of right now, only four ejected, but it was such a massive brawl that I bet Major League Baseball takes a look at it. They tend to take those things a little seriously.
I hope Upton gave an RKO to somebody in the middle of all of that. I mean,
well, there was a tweet from a Yankee person saying, you know, I'm already seeing these replays. I wonder if MLB is going to look at that because Gary Sanchez, the backup catcher, had to come in. Yeah, I saw at least three punches thrown by him at people. One of them right into the back of Tigers catcher James McCann. So
I shouldn't love it.
It was entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah, given the lack of entertainment value that the Tigers have given us over the course of the most of the summer, but certainly for the last month plus or so. I mean, this is about all you get. They're not going to play entertaining baseball. They're not going to be in contention for the division or a wild card spot. Come on, give us some good stuff. So,
yeah, exactly. That's why I said when I was first mentioning this last hour that I hate to say this, Tigers fans, but this is the most life I've seen out of the Tigers in weeks.
Yeah, well, and Miggy in particular. I mean, I'm sure that hit to Romine was probably the hardest thing he's hit in a week. So, sorry, but you're talking about 254 with 13 dingers and 56 RBIs for who? Miguel Cabrera? That's like 2 months. That home run, that's like a month. What am I saying? 13 and 50. That's like a month in home run production, or at least it could be, for the old Miguel Cabrera, who happens to look like an old Miguel Cabrera right now. All right. Sorry about that. Let's talk baseball now in a number of other forms with Chris Cotillo, who works with MLBDailyDish.com, joining us now right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Chris, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good. Just catching up on the video of that fist fight. It was pretty entertaining.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm sitting here doing other work as I get ready for the next segment, and I did not see the video of that, so I'm looking forward to it. Is it on Twitter, I assume, or did people have tweeted?
Yeah, you just look on, like, Miguel Cabrera punches, and you pretty much have it.
All right, I will indeed. Oh, there it is. It's trending. It's going to be easy. Just a couple of quicks, or a couple of clicks, I should say. Okay, wow, there's the push. Boy, it was a harder hit. And then a couple of swings and misses, which we've seen more of from McGee than perhaps Tigers fans wish we had. All right, let's go to the big story in baseball last night, Chris, and just kind of talk about it. Rich Hill goes from perfecto through 8 to the error costing him that, but still the no-no through 9. And then we get into the 10 and the no-no. Well, you know, not gonna throw the no-hitter because you give up a hit. But now you're not even going to get the win because that hit happened to be a walk-off home run, for crying out loud. Of all of the days for the monster juggernaut offense that the Dodgers have to not produce any runs for a pitcher, it happened to be last night.
Yeah, that's tough. It was probably the most heartbreaking, you know, close call to a no-hitter since Armando Galarraga. Maybe some people would think that this was even worse just because, you know, I'm sorry, that probably brings back bad memories to some of your audience, but
yeah.
It's... I think they were playing Cleveland, right? The Galarraga game. So
exactly
it brings back good memories for the other half, I guess. But
both Jim Kush, I keep wanting to call him Kushler for some reason. Kushlin and I are both Cleveland fans, so we saw that from the other side. But even both of us and virtually everybody in Cleveland that I talked to and know hated that. I mean, you know, hated the fact that Galarraga was robbed of that. That's his history. The difference between these two guys is he earned his perfect game and got it stolen from him by an umpire. At the end of the day here, despite the error, Rich Hill gave up a game-winning home run that was all his own.
Yeah, and it was close. You know, I thought, you know, I think it was Granderson and left about to rob it, and it didn't happen. It's just, you know, Rich Hill, it's an inspiring story. This would have been kind of the pinnacle of his career to this point. He was in independent baseball a couple of years ago, signed a minor league deal with the Red Sox, impressed in September on a bad team, got $6 million to play for the A's last year, which was, you know, a surprising deal. And people thought, wow, this is, you know, great that he's going to get $6 million. Shocking that they're actually giving him this much money. And then a year later, he signs the biggest contract for a free agent pitcher last year for L.A., pitching on a contender, probably going to have a good big role in the postseason for them. And, you know, last night was looked like it was going to be one of his showcase performances of his career, and just unfortunately for him, it went from a perfect game to a no-hitter to a loss in about two innings, and that's not something I don't think we've ever seen in baseball and might not ever see again.
I think you're right. Let's talk more about the Dodgers briefly. Some people are tracking this, you know, their winning percentage and their pace to try to set the record and to get to 116 wins and all that stuff. I'm not one of them. But do you think this matters to them in any way, shape, or form? And do you think that pursuing it, however you pursue it, because you try to win every game, and this is what's weird about it. I'm asking this in the context of 2 years ago with the Golden State Warriors pursuing 73. And they actually actively pursued it, not just trying to win every game, which you do, but, you know, they made a big deal about it. And then, of course, they lost in the finals, and it was kind of all undone. Do you think the Dodgers have any different approach, knowing that they could be on a historic pace? You know, as they go into September, will they do anything any differently to try to set a record for wins?
I think you're looking at a very injured team right now. Obviously, Darvish, Bellinger, Wood, Kershaw, a bunch of other pitchers. Like, it's key contributors who have not been healthy in the last month, and there's – in no way, shape, or form are they going to rush any of these guys back to try to reach 117 wins. I really think that would be a stupid strategy, especially in a short five-game series where you need all your horses. They got Darvish not for these 2 months. When they acquired Darvish, who cares about his August starts? Who cares about his September starts? It's all about those starts in October when they need him behind Kershaw in front of Wood. You know, have, you know, a whole rotation basically on the disabled list along with Bellinger. Get these guys healthy. These games literally do not matter for them because they could probably lose every game from here on out and still be in the postseason. And I think it's just all about October for them. So with them, they're in a unique – you know, if they had everybody healthy, I think it would be a more interesting conversation to have if they were going to chase the record, but they don't. So it's tough to really envision any scenario in which they prioritize that over, you know, getting these guys healthy and at full capacity for the playoffs.
Yeah, it just, you know, for those of us who are outside of it, you know, just either in the media or just fans, I love history, and I love seeing things like this happen. And I'm looking at them, and I'm, you know, last year's World Series champions, the Cubs have 68 wins. They're having a good season. That's 11 games over 500. They're up in their division by 3.5. Their opponents were the Indians. They got 69 wins. They're having a good season, too. They're up 4.5 in their division, probably going to win that. They each have 20 less or 21 less victories than the Dodgers have right now, 89-36. It's one of those things where it's like, my God, you know, if they can do it, I want to do it. I wanted to see Tiger win all four majors in one calendar year to have the Grand Slam that way, not just the Tiger Slam. I wanted to see the Warriors, if they can make history, set history, and I kind of want to see the Dodgers do that. But you're right. It's more about winning in October than it is at this particular time. It's just one of those things where it makes what can be a long, boring, drawn-out, mundane season, it makes it a little bit more fun when you look at this from a historical perspective.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And, like, I'm from Massachusetts, diehard Patriots fan, so I was all on board with them chasing 16-0 back then. But then you think back, you know, week 17, they go into the Meadowlands and basically play everybody against the Giants, maybe showing them a little bit more than I wish they did for a month later when they lost him in the Super Bowl. And, you know, 18-1, I guess, is still the worst record in my head because that was so heartbreaking. So I think, you know, the eyes on the prize have to be on the World Series, on the NBA Finals if you're the Warriors, on the Super Bowl if you're the Patriots. I'm sure, you know, that was 16-0 was debated 10 years ago, 11 years ago, as much as this will be debated, as much as it was at the Warriors. But it's the end of the day, you remember the champions, and I think that's really important.
Chris, I just got word, more fireworks in Detroit. Give us the update here, Kush.
Okay, so James McCann is up for the Tigers now against Dylan Betances. And he was, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, he was involved with the massive brawl earlier. And Dylan Betances decides to throw and hit him in the helmet.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes, and I think the Yankees bench coach and Betances have now been ejected. So I have no idea, literally no idea at this point, who is managing the Yankees. They've lost their bench coach and their manager.
Bench is empty again?
Bench is emptied again. No punches were thrown this time. But I saw a lot of evil looks from people. Like there was a quick shot of Verlander, and he had this I'm going to kill you look in his face. Wow. It is insane up there in Detroit right now.
Wow, look at all of these fireworks where, you know, I can't say it's a game, doesn't matter, the Yankees are trying to catch the Red Sox, but from the Tigers' point of view, you know, it's just playing out the string here in late summer, but wow, that's crazy. Keep us posted and let us go. By the way, best tweet I've seen so far as I looked that up was forget Mayweather and McGregor, give me Austin Romine and Miguel Cabrera. That might be a better fight than what we're going to see on Saturday.
You know, and this whole thing does lead me to a question that comes up, you know, for you, Chris. And if this comes up at least once or twice a season, Bob, you know this. We talk about it when it does come up. What are your thoughts on the old, you know, unwritten baseball rules, which we're seeing being played out right now in Detroit? To you hit my guy, I'm going to hit your guy. What are your thoughts on that? Because it always comes up.
I think it's really, you know, tough to really.
Chris, did we lose you? Chris, your phone's cut. Chris Cotillo from MLBDailyDish.com is our guest. Chris, your phone cut out. The last thing we heard from you is it's tough to really, and that's all we got. Well, tough to really.
You got me now?
Yeah, let's try. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so I was just saying, I think I just watched that video, and it's a straight-up headshot at probably 99 miles an hour. That's completely unacceptable, in my opinion. Even if it did slip out of his hand, you can use that excuse all the time, but that's where you get into the danger zone. If you're going to hit a guy in the small, the back of 99, it's not going to feel good. But you're legitimately putting lives on the line when you go with the head, and I have a huge problem with that.
I do, too. And I got a huge problem with throwing at somebody intentionally anyway, unless you know for a 100% fact that the other guy did it. You know, this whole you hit one of mine, I hit one of you. If somebody is trying to work the inside of the plate and get somebody in the ribs or even in the shoulder, I mean, you don't want to go up around the head, but if it's truly, you know, there's no history there, there's no reason to believe it would be intentional. And most of these players know what's on purpose and what isn't. If you know for a fact somebody drilled your guy with a purpose intentionally, and your pitcher gets back and says, we'll have no more of that by drilling one of theirs, I'm okay, but that's the extent of the code. If it's an unintentional thing, you don't retaliate, in my view, Chris. You don't retaliate by drilling somebody else intentionally for something that is just a, you know, an incidental part of the game when you're trying to work inside.
Right, and that comes up time and time again, and it's always, you know, really impossible to determine intent because these guys are always going to claim that they it slipped out of their hand or whatever, but it's always tough to see guys getting, you know, the risk of being injured. I think that's really completely unacceptable in my mind.
Do you think it really is tough to determine intent? I've heard a lot of these guys say, you know, when it's intentional and when isn't. These guys know each other, and they also know what their histories are, and if something was done, you know, last year or something happened, you know, at a previous confrontation between somebody. These guys almost always say, you know, when it's on purpose and what is.
Well, it's tough. No one will ever admit it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, no one will ever come right out with it, and that creates the problem of, you know, that shadow of doubt, no matter, you know, the history or whatever. We saw that with Harper earlier this year with Machado and the Red Sox and that kind of
right.
stuff. So that's always the issue.
And you know what I think is, I don't know. I mean, I want baseball to say, screw you and your admission. I don't need it. I'm making the determination, whether it's the umpires or the disciplinary committee or whatever the case might be. I mean, the NFL doesn't need the defensive back to admit that he targeted a guy's helmet. They just decide, you know what, you hit him in the helmet, whether it was intentional or not, you're gone. They make the decision. I feel like baseball needs to take the unwritten rules and codes and whatever you want to call it out of, you know, the players' hands and take it back into their own. I decided. I thought that was intentional, says the home plate umpire. You're gone. That's it. You know, don't give me this. It got away. I know better. And maybe baseball ought to make that call.
Yeah, they definitely have. You know, we've seen some stricter punishments recently. Hunter Strickland's suspension earlier this year with the Harper incident comes to mind. And there's been, you know, a few times they've done that. I like the NFL comparison you just made. And if they deter, I think there'll be big time suspensions in this. There's punches thrown, the headshot, as I said, stuff like that. So we should see some big punishments here.
Chris Cotillo joining us, talking a little baseball this afternoon right here on The Ticket, part of MLBDailyDish.com. Chris, American League Central, obviously we talked about the Indians just a little bit. They're the walking wounded right now. My goodness, Andrew Miller's on the shelf. Danny Salazar's on the shelf. Jason Kipnis just went back to the DL. They're having a hard time scoring runs these last couple of nights against the Red Sox. They still have a 4.5 game lead on the Twins, 5 on the Royals. Any concerns that these injuries could cost them the legitimate chance to hold on to their division championship?
Probably not. You know, I think they're probably the clear favorite there. I would get, you know, concerned, especially in the postseason, if you don't have weapons like Kipnis and Miller and even Salazar. I think that's really tough. You want to be heading into the postseason at full strength. You're seeing every team's been dealing with injuries, and you know some of these teams have the luxury of not having to worry about them. Like the Dodgers, you know, can play it slow or whatever, and obviously the Astros with Correa and Springer, as good as they've been, can play it slow. The Red Sox, you know, lost Jackie Bradley for a week. Luckily for them, that wasn't that severe, but the Indians kind of a lot of injuries at the same time, and, you know, it only becomes a problem in my mind if it affects October. I think the Indians are still the clear favorite in the Central for now.
For probably half to, I don't know, maybe even the first 4 months of the season, the Astros were clearly the best team in the American League. Are they still, or do you look at the Red Sox and the Indians, the other division leaders, are they making, you know, they're injury riddled also, are the Astros. So I shouldn't sit here and just complain that the Indians got a bunch of guys injured. So does Houston. They also look a little
And Boston with David Price and Jackie Bradley and Stephen Wright and some of those guys the Red Sox have lost too. I mean, I think it's tough for me because I watch the Red Sox more than anyone because I live there and, you know, you have it all the time, but
sure.
I think they're a really legit contender. If you have Sale, Porcello, Price, Pomeranz, those types of guys, in the postseason with that lineup they have, and really, you know, the Red Sox were in it all year, or leading the division all year, and I kept saying, you know, I don't think this team's reached its potential. We've seen that happen over the last couple of weeks. Andrew Benintendi, some other guys really stepping up, and now you're looking at a team that's really opened it up in the East, and I think will be a legit contender to go to the World Series and, you know, take on whoever it is. Obviously, MLB would love if you have a Cubs Red Sox or Dodgers Red Sox, something like that, World Series.
Do you, since you're you know, a Boston guy and a Red Sox guy, can you tell me why David Price is such a red ass? Why he has to? I mean, this whole thing with Eckersley, and it's just, it seems like he's always ready and willing to pick a fight with somebody. He's constantly got a chip on his shoulder. Is it? I guess it's not too much of a distraction because when he had the thing with Eckersley, his teammates applauded him. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's a very complicated situation. I think David Price is a terrible fit for the city of Boston. I think he's oversensitive, to put it bluntly. I think he was before they signed him, and I think, you know, I always say, well, why would you go to a place if you knew it wasn't going to be a good fit? And he has 217 million reasons, I think. You know, I'm a student at Carolina. If you said go transfer to Duke for $217 million, I'd probably do it very reluctantly, but not really because of all the money. So I think, you know, it was a bad fit from the start, and it didn't make sense, but the money spoke. And now all of a sudden he's, you know, one of the least liked Red Sox players that's been around Boston in a long time. So I think he's you know, carving out a legacy where people are hoping he's going to opt out in a couple of years. People are hoping that, you know, and if he's hurt, if this requires Tommy John, then it's basically, in a way, the Red Sox having him for four more years guaranteed because he can't opt out coming off Tommy John. And you'll look at now a seven-year stay in Boston, $217 million. And, you know, he was okay last year. He wasn't terrible. A lot of people expected a lot more, but there's always that, you know, Boston honeymoon period where, okay, you're here in our city and it's a tough place to play. Obviously, it's a tough place to write. It's a tough place to be involved in baseball anyway. But, the honeymoon period is over and he's still complaining and not used to it. And and especially rallying the teammates against, especially the Hall of Famer, really rubs me the wrong way.
Just I totally agree with that. By the way, what's weird though is you said you know he's one of the least liked players. You know, people kind of want to see him go, blah blah blah. But not his teammates, right? I mean, I'm going
now,
to assume the story that they cheered him when he ripped Eckersley, you know, publicly like that.
Yeah, the teammates seem to be all on board in this war against the media. I don't know if that's an us against the world type of thing or whatever, but it's it's concerning to say the least.
Yeah, no question about it. Chris Cotillo does a tremendous job with MLBDailyDish.com, breaking down some of the top MLB stories of the day today, including the SummerSlam going on up at Comerica this afternoon. Chris, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it, sir. Have yourself a great day.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much. 4:33 right now as we continue on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to hook you up with our sweet deal of the week before we take our bottom of the hour Sports Center break. I've got a sweet deal, a $50 gift certificate that you can get tomorrow online at 1065theticket.com for half price, just $25, to Zaza Wood-Fired Pizza and Mediterranean Cuisine on Executive Parkway off Secor by Westgate. Just log on tomorrow morning and get that $50 gift certificate for just $25 while supplies last, starting at 9 a.m. Or how about I give you one for flat-out nothing? That's right, free right now. Caller, what did I do before, 5 and 8?
Yeah.
Let's go in between. Caller 6. Caller 6 right now, 866-240-1065, will give you the free $50 gift certificate to Zaza Wood-Fired Pizza and Mediterranean Cuisine. It is our sweet deal of the week. Back with our final half hour after the Sports Center and your calls at 866-240-1065 on the Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Okay, then. David Brininger? Did I have it right? Kush?
Brininger.
Brininger. Dang it. I went with the what do you call it? Not the long I, the short I, I guess. I went with Brininger. And I went with the soft G instead of the hard G. David Brininger of Sylvania. That one's easier. David, congratulations. He was our winner of the sweet deal of the week. So good job, good sir. Hey, I want to remind you, as we do indeed continue, about the tremendous new Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. If you have not yet been out there to the new location at Franklin Park Mall, you have got to get there. My goodness gracious, we're talking about authentic Mexican restaurant. Brand new, by the way. Everything there is brand new. Inside, bar, booths, tables, chairs, all of it. It's gorgeous. And the authentic Mexican feel is only exceeded by the authentic Mexican taste of the Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. Every single day, like right now, there's happy hour. That's right. Insane drink specials from 3 to 6 every day, 7 days a week. Also, don't forget to try their signature margarita. It's their version of a skinny margarita, healthier way to have your margarita, plus Taco Tuesdays every week. Tacos are just a dollar there. Now, the original location for Don Juan is still there at Maumee, in Maumee on Dussel Drive, but the brand new location is at Franklin Park Mall, not in the food court. Got to go in on the Monroe Street side. It's right between JCPenney and Dillard's, directly across from Nick and Jimmy's. That's Don Juan. Enter from the outside. You're going to love it. Don Juan, Mexican Bar and Grill, now at the Franklin Park Mall. All right, Kush, any more fireworks, any more punches, any more brushbacks, any more beanballs?
As of right now, no. But who knows the way this game has gone. It's insane. They are down to they've already lost two coaches, have the Yankees. That's something I haven't seen in a long time, where multiple coaches.
A manager and a bench coach.
The manager and the bench coach are out.
They're on their third skipper, if you will,
yes.
In this game.
Yes, yes. They are on their third skipper of the game. And as of right now, as far as I've been getting word, the only Tiger so far to have been ejected is Miguel Cabrera. The others are all Yankees. The two coaches we just mentioned,
yeah.
Along with Romine, the catcher, and then both Canale and and Dylan Betances is the pitcher. So five total Yankees and Miguel Cabrera all ejected from this one. And the way when they really get a look at some of these videos, I'm sure guys in Major League Baseball are already have already taken a look at the main brawl. I think there's going to be some fines and suspensions from even some players who didn't who were not in ejected in this one.
Can we do a live cut in here and go right to the actual audio of the game here? Between the Tigers and the Yankees, I think we can do that. Here, let me pot up the live cut into the game and see what's going on.
Yeah, that's what happens, man.
Oh my God!
Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah, you like that? That feel good? That feel good?
All right, so there you go. They seem to have lost control of that one just a little bit, Kush. I don't know.
It sure seems like it. And I've been seeing there's many Yankee people right now on Twitter I'm seeing saying, this umpiring crew can't control. No, you know what you can't control? I saw the shots of Dylan Betances after he threw the pitch. This was the second bench clearing that didn't result in a brawl.
Right.
And he's sitting there jawing at the umpire as if, come on, it slipped out of me. Give me a break. You're really going to try to say you didn't do that intentionally? Yeah. Hit him on the logo on his helmet. Don't tell me that wasn't intentional.
Well, if you're 100% right. If the intention is to avoid a fine and a suspension, then you understand why he's going to say what it slipped.
Right.
But given everything that happened before that, I don't think anybody's buying.
Funny side note to this brawl too, yeah. By the way, because they've been replaying. Yeah, I'm watching on the TV machine from the Fox Sports Detroit guys. Funny side note to the actual brawl itself. It involves two former Indians, Bob, from the 90s. One, because one of the other bench coaches who has not been ejected yet, if you recall, is Tony Pena. You know, the catcher
sure.
From 95.
Oh, yeah, love him.
Him trying to restrain people is hilarious. And you know who else was in the middle of the brawl? And he didn't throw any punches. He was trying to pull some people off, and I swear he got hit at one point.
Who?
Tigers first base coach and former Indian Omar Vizquel.
Wow, really? Omar got in the middle of all
it was of that. that bad of a brawl. When we're done, please, I'm sure it's up by now, go check out. Somebody's probably posted some video of this already. Yeah, Omar is trying to pull people out of there, and somebody decked him in the back, too. It's insane.
Wow, really, really crazy stuff going on up there at Comerica. That brawl, by the way, between Bromine and Miggy, I mean, that's pretty epic. I mean, how often do you see jaw, 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 jaw? And then, you know, the mask comes off. Bromine's mask comes off.
Yep.
Jaw, jaw, jaw. And that was Miggy's invitation for the two-handed push to the chest, a hard shove that, you know, resulted in a shot back by Bromine and then essentially a full-body tackle, and it was on. I just really, really crazy stuff going on there at the Yankees-Tigers. Right, Tigers. Right now, Miguel Cabrera is still trending, but far below Yankees-Tigers is trending. That one is trending more right now, and hopefully there's a good look. Yeah, there's the push, there's the punch, and you just got to find this on Twitter. I'm looking for the beanball, the Betances beanball that you're talking about that happened after that.
Yeah, that was an inning later. That one might not be up yet.
Oh, and somebody stole my idea, Jake Montgomery. Somebody named Jake Montgomery just tweeted a picture of a Royal Rumble, WWE Royal Rumble, saying live looking at the Yankees-Tigers game. I can't do live look-in. All I can do is the live cut-in of the audio broadcast, which, of course, I was more than happy to give you.
Ooh!
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Good times. Okay. A couple of other notes. That I wanted to follow up on the Kaepernick story, which, of course, took another weird, strange turn last night with a bunch of protesters, actually, in my opinion, hurting Kaepernick's chances of getting a job in the National Football League by bringing the circus to the commissioner's office outside the NFL headquarters in New York City. It's exactly what NFL owners don't want. They don't want circuses. They don't want causes. They just want to play. That's it. So it's kind of one of those weird, strange situations where they think they're helping and they're probably not. To give you a bit of an idea of how upset fans are, a lot of fans, and a lot of just, you know, good, decent, patriotic Americans over this nonsense started by Kaepernick, let me share with you the views of an Ohio Supreme Court justice. Gosh, I don't know if you heard this. This is big. This is the highest court in the land in the state of Ohio, responding not specifically to Kaepernick, but to the Browns, who echoed and mimicked Kaepernick during that game on Monday night, the preseason game against the Giants on Monday. Supreme Court Justice Bill O'Neill, William M. O'Neill, could not stomach what he witnessed. 12 players kneeling during the anthem in what they described as a prayer, but everybody else knows, especially since some of them admitted it, was a protest of racial and social injustice as they see it. Ohio Supreme Court Justice William O'Neill, the lone Democrat on the high court, FYI, just in case it means anything to you, vented in a Facebook post. Let me read the entire thing to you, if I can pull up the entire context of it here quickly, because it's been pieced up. It's been kind of spread out in piecemeal fashion. Let's put it that way. Yeah, here we go. Congratulations, Cleveland Browns, on your win. Unfortunately, my season ended last night. I will never attend a sporting event where the draft-dodging millionaire athletes disrespect the veterans who earned them the right to be on that field. Shame on you all. William O'Neill, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army, retired. Vietnam veteran, son of a World War II veteran, proud father of an Iraq veteran. That lets you know how serious so many of these things are. And this is why people again say, well, Kaepernick is being blackballed. It's clearly this is just a bunch of racist owners. No, it's a bunch of owners who don't want to upset a bunch of very patriotic fans, including somebody like a Supreme Court justice, Bill O'Neill, for a guy whose talent isn't worth that headache. And all I need to prove that point, Kush, and I brought this up before, and you can feel free to respond, is that Malcolm Jenkins is kneeling. He's still on a team. Michael Bennett is kneeling. He's still on a team. Marshawn Lynch is kneeling, or sitting. He's still on a team. Those Browns players are kneeling, and they're on a team. The reason why? They have value that exceeds the distraction that their protests bring with it. Michael Bennett is a better defensive player to the Seahawks than Colin Kaepernick would be as an offensive player to a team that might want to sign him. Thus, he is worth any questions that the coaches might have to answer. To the Seahawks, he is. He is worth any complaints that people in Seattle might have, Patriots in Seattle might have, not New England variety, of course, might have about this, that the Seahawks ownership would have to deal with. Marshawn Lynch's value as a running back is worth the distraction and the complaints that the Raiders front office might get or the coaches might get from media and others who feel incredibly angry about the disrespect being shown the flag and the anthem. Who else did I say? Who else has been kneeling on a semi-regular basis? Oh, Malcolm Jenkins. Malcolm Jenkins is worth it as a defensive player, even though he's a rook. He's worth to the Philadelphia Eagles the headaches that it might bring to have him doing these kneeling protests. So the bottom line that you can take from this, the only thing you can really discern from this is if Colin Kaepernick was a better player, he would be worth the headaches that his protests bring with them. If he was a better passer. If he was more proficient at the offensive on the offensive side of the ball, then his negatives add up to, you know, on the protest scale, he would have a job. Nobody can claim that he is being blackballed. Nobody can claim that this is racism. There are black quarterbacks all throughout the National Football League. There are black players. Every one of the ones I just mentioned are black, the ones who are doing these protests. Nobody is banning them. Nobody is blackballing them. Nobody is cutting them. It must be stated emphatically, Colin Kaepernick quit. He quit on his team. He quit his job. He was not fired from his job for his protest. He chose to leave thinking he could make more money on the free agent market elsewhere. He did not anticipate how many people would look at his skills, how many teams would look at his skills and say, yeah, not so much anymore, and then weigh those skills and the possible production he would provide in terms of points and touchdowns and drives and wins, et cetera, that they would weigh that against the negativity that he would bring. And now he knows. Now he knows. It was a bad career move. But at the end of the day, all of these other players prove what Shady McCoy, LeSean McCoy, said, as I quoted it last hour. He said today, for those who just turned on the radio and maybe haven't seen this online, Buffalo Bills running back, former Michael Vick teammate with the Eagles, LeSean Shady McCoy, said earlier today that the reason Colin Kaepernick, this is a black guy, the reason Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job is because he's not good enough at football to put up with the distractions that he brings to town. Wow. Where have you heard that before? Kush, your reaction.
You know, first of all, the part about the, oh, he's being blackballed
thing. Whoa, hold on. Bench is cleared again?
Yep.
Holy cow.
I was waiting for you to see that message I had to send you.
Now I see it. What happened?
Okay, so Alex Wilson of the Tigers, I question if this is going to end it all, because that's three on the day. He hits Todd Frazier square in the arse.
Well, at least it's down there, not in the helmet.
I can't give brownie points to anybody on this particular afternoon of WWE action in Comerica Park.
I can. Look, and I'm not trying to be biased here or curry favor with Detroit Tiger fans. I'm just saying straight up. Their guy hit your guy in the head.
And this is after the big brawl.
After this happened, an intentional headshot, okay? That in and of itself, I mean, that can end careers.
Yep.
For crying out loud, if he doesn't move out of the way and it hits him in the face instead of the helmet, it could lose his sight. I mean, we know the stories. That intentional act demanded a response. Frazier is lucky that it hit him in the arse. He is lucky that's all Wilson did in response. So I'm sorry. I will give brownie points for that small little portion of this whole thing, but please continue.
So then he's, you know, going to first, and he's having to be restrained because he was clearly yelling back at Wilson, and just looking at through the TV screen, it looked like he was going to charge. The bench is cleared to around home plate, unlike the second bench is cleared. So that's three separate bench clearing incidents in the last three innings.
Wow.
And there was some shoving in this one. Nothing like the first one, but there was some blatant shoving going on in this third one. And
oh, by the way,
so, it happened three times now.
By the way, on the scoreboard, it should be noted, too, that the Tigers, who gave up the lead 6-3 to tie it at 6-6, got it back. And
yes.
They're now up 9-6.
Jose Iglesias had a bases-clearing three-run double in the bottom half of the inning prior to when Alex Wilson hits Todd Frazier in the arse, thus getting the benches to clear once again.
Just in case anybody cares about the baseball portion.
Right. At this point, seeing what I've seen this afternoon in this game, here in the background in the studio, I almost don't care about the game itself. We've all seen brawls at base. We've all seen the things. This has happened three separate times now in three innings worth of baseball in this game from the fifth through the seventh inning. I've never seen anything like it.
Simply fascinating stuff. Jim, I apologize. I wanted to get your reaction to the Kaepernick story and everything LeSean Shady McCoy said. We'll obviously do that tomorrow as a part of our free-for-all Friday. So that's all the time we've got for today. Stay where you are, though, because drive time is coming up next right here with Mike Miller on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you on free-for-all Friday. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.